Tom Wilkerson flying the friendly skies to Omaha, where Tennessee will be playing in the College World Series. They'll take on Virginia Sunday at 2 o'clock. Boy, there's a lot of excitement in this town about Tennessee and the College World Series. So, John will be calling the game along with Vince Farrar. Vince will be heading out on Friday. Should be an exciting week. Vince, have you been to Omaha before for the World Series?
I have not. Jimmy, that's obviously bucket list for me. So never been to the state of Nebraska and never been to the College World Series. So we'll check those two things off and hope to have a good time and see some great baseball.
Well, there's from all indications and watching it on TV, it's a great atmosphere. It should be a lot of fun. They moved from Rosenblatt Stadium. They have a new stadium, but it should be a wonderful experience, and we'll see how Tennessee does. I was kind of surprised you told me that there's a chance that this College World Series could bleed into what, June the 28th? Is that what you were telling me? There's a potential for the final game to be played then?
Well, no, actually, that's when game one of the final series would be, is June 28th.
Oh, game one of the final series. Oh, goodness.
Yeah, game two, the 29th, game three, the 30th. So, we could be, if Tennessee is in that, we could be heading back July 1st, you know, potentially. I don't know, maybe the team would fly back quicker than that. We'll see. But, yeah, this could go on till June 30th. It's spread out much more than, say, the SEC tournament.
Well, if Ma packed the bags, you should have put a lot of clothes in there. So, or you got to find a washing machine out there, which I'm sure they have. But anyway, it should be a good week and a half maybe for Tennessee. But we'll have John Wilkerson. We'll get some reports for him. And I will just say this. We have a lineup of guests. We're having some phone issues. There's a chance we won't have any of our guests. So rather than go through that list, I will hope that we're able to get this fixed. And if we do, we will tell you what's on our agenda as far as our guest list. Meanwhile, let's get to our news and notes brought to you by Image Matters. Technology you need, people that you can trust. College World Series. All right, Tennessee, I thought it was interesting on Monday, the top two favorites for the College World Series, Vanderbilt and Tennessee. By Tuesday, Texas had overtaken Tennessee as one of the favorites. So Texas is the highest seed remaining at a 2. Tennessee comes in as a 3 seed. Virginia has the worst record of any team in the field. They're 34-25. They started ACC play 6-12. They won 12 of their last 18 conference games. They lost the first game of the South Carolina Regional, rallied to win it. Lost the first game of the 2-3 against Dallas Baptist, rallied to win it. They're led by a pitcher, Andrew Abbott, who has an 8-6 record, a 3.04 earned run average, 150 strikeouts. He's allowed only 32 earned runs. He averages 13.68 strikeouts per 9 innings. That's pretty darn impressive. And Virginia has the 16th best team ERA at 3.70. Also, Joe Lunardi, I was looking at a new bracketology from him, and he likes the SEC as far as the NCAA tournament this upcoming season. He's got Alabama as the highest seed from the SEC at a 3. He's got Tennessee, Kentucky, and Arkansas all as a 4 seed. Auburn at 6, Florida at 8, and LSU at 10. LSU's among the last four to get a bye into the field. A 7 seed is Memphis. The 1 seeds, according to Lunardi, will be, this will sound familiar, Gonzaga, Kansas, Michigan, and UCLA. Also, and I'm going to get you to help me with this story, Vince, but you were telling me that Ross Dellinger with The Athletic, right?
Yes.
Is he with The Athletic? Okay.
Well, no, Sports Illustrated. Sports Illustrated.
Sports Illustrated, okay.
Yes.
He said there was a 4-man working group that had been meeting secretly in hotels to plot a college football proposal, and they'd been doing this for, what, almost 2 years?
Yes. And it's insane. We can get into more details later. But, yeah, it is. You're talking about them swearing to secrecy and the one quote out of it was – we were sworn to secrecy, which means all this time, Jimmy, when they've been asked about it, and do you have plans? Are you considering expanding the playoff? And how many times did we hear, nope, we're not. That's not something we're looking at right now. That's a lot.
Not even discussing it.
Right.
Yeah.
And those questions have been asked in so many different ways. It wasn't just, hey, are you going to expanding the playoffs? He's been asked every – Bill Hancock and many others have been asked in a lot of varying ways to try to get some sort of insight on it, and everything has been like, no, that's not something we're looking at right now, all that, when they have four guys, 2 years secretly meeting at airport hotels, and then it's been about a year that they came to the number of 12 and settled on that. So this is not new. It's amazing.
Well, it's new to us, but it's it's
right.
Privately, yeah. Well, and here's the other thing, too, from Bill Hancock. I remember him saying multiple times that they would fill out the 12-year contract with the college football playoff. So they would not be expanding until that was over, which obviously he and others knew better than that. So, all right, we were fed a bill of goods on that deal. That is very surprising to me. All right, let's hit the NBA. There are a ton of notes on the NBA. So the Nets beat Milwaukee last night, 114-109. Kevin Durant, the first ever 45-point, 15-rebound, 10-assist game. He had 47 points, 17 rebounds, 10 assists. He'd played over 1,000 games in the NBA, and he'd never done that. But this isn't the first time ever in a playoff game that somebody put up those kind of numbers. He accounted for a career-high 74 points. Some of those assists, obviously, were on made three-pointers. He played all 48 minutes. James Harden, they weren't sure whether he was going to play at all, 46 minutes. Now, statistically, not effective. 5 points, 1 of 10 from the field, 8 assists, 6 rebounds. But, Vince, I think just his presence helped the Nets. His numbers aren't very good, but I just think him being out on the court probably was of a benefit to the Nets, who overcame a 16-point deficit in the second half.
100%. I couldn't believe, I think it was at halftime, Charles Barkley on TNT said that James Harden shouldn't be out there. And I could not believe it. I mean, one, he's an athlete. He has the ability to make that decision. If he doesn't feel like he should be out there, he won't be out there. Plenty of other guys don't play when they're not healthy. And he is hamstring improved, so he was out there. Now, he clearly wasn't anything close to what he normally is, but he was a presence out there. He still was someone you didn't know how much he could do, how he was going to be incorporated in the offense. So you still had to account for him to a certain degree. So I think he still helped them. And, just another ball handler. I mean, you name it, he helped them. He just wasn't able to put in the points and the shooting ability he normally does. So, yeah, he was critical to have out there. But it's basically one and a half of the three stars that they normally do, and that was enough to rally from down big to beat the Bucks, who I think are done. And, it's been impressive that they've gotten two games because of the Nets' injuries, but I don't see how they win two straight now, especially if the Nets get even healthier.
Unless Harden doesn't play again, unless he aggravates it, and it's just Durant. But yes, I would agree
right,
with you. If they have two of their big three on the court, I'd agree with you. Jeff Green, by the way, came up big in the absence of Harden's offense and the absence of Kyrie Irving. Period. Green had 27 points. He had his first 7 threes. Giannis had 34 points, 12 rebounds for Milwaukee. That just wasn't enough. And here was an interesting set too: assist to turnover ratio. The Nets, 27 assists, 10 turnovers. Milwaukee, 18 assists, 12 turnovers. That was big in the game. Other big news in the NBA: Kawhi Leonard, knee ligament sprain. He is not going to play in Game 5, and he is likely out for the series as the Clippers take on Utah. They play tonight. Leonard missed 20 games this year. The Clippers were 11-9 in those games. I'm always leery of those kind of stats, Vince, unless I know who the 20 opponents were. Were there teams that all had a losing record? Did half the teams have a winning record? I don't know that answer. But without Leonard, I give the Clippers no chance to beat Utah. What do you think?
Very little, I would say. We'd have to see a Paul George that we have not seen before at this level in the postseason. That would be the only way. And then everyone else is playing out of their minds and Utah having a tough time. But you would think that Donovan Mitchell could will them past that. Now, he's not the only guy on the team, but he's their biggest piece. And I think that's been part of the Jazz issue, is they haven't had enough guys contribute and elevate their play to help Donovan Mitchell. So I would say very little chance for the Clippers. But, and then who knows what other injuries, if something impacts the Clippers, somebody else, or the Jazz, that could be a factor too. But, yeah, that definitely is a huge blow, a big blow to the Clippers.
in the last 3 years of NBA playoff basketball, Leonard has averaged 28.7 points. That's first. He's had 26 30-point games. That's first. And he's played 1,882 minutes. That's first. Chris Paul, he is out right now, COVID, NBA protocol. Unsure when he might be back. The Suns could play on Sunday. Will he be back by then? Not sure. Looking at Paul's numbers when he has been in the game or played for the Suns versus when he's not, there's been a differential of almost 8 points per game. Now, these numbers are pretty interesting. I did not realize this until I saw these flash up on ESPN. Against Denver, Paul averaged 25.5 points, 10.3 assists, 8-2 assist-to-turnover ratio, shot 63% from the field, 6 of 8 on threes. Against the Lakers, 9.2 points, 7.7 assists, 5.1 assist-to-turnover, and shot 39% from the field, 2 of 10 on threes. So he didn't really have a very good series against the Lakers, but he was lights out against Denver. So, you know, we'll see if he's going to be able to come back. Okay. And in the NBA, Scott Brooks, Washington, there for 5 years, fired. 183-207, made three playoffs. Stan Van Gundy, 1 year with New Orleans, 31-41, fired. That means Zion Williamson will have his third coach in 3 years. All right, bounce wow. around. Major League Baseball, Yan Gomes, VFL, hit his fourth grand slam of his career. Washington beat Pittsburgh 8-1. And then two teams in the Major League Baseball with ridiculous losing streaks. Arizona at 22. That's the third longest streak ever. The record is 23 by the 63 Mets and 43 A's. And Baltimore's lost 17 in a row on the road. I saw this note on ESPN, and I'm going to challenge it. Maybe you can help me with this, Vince. It said the Dodgers drew 52,000 last night. The largest sporting attendance for a U.S. sports event since the pandemic. Well, I thought the Indy 500 had 135,000. So, I don't, right? Didn't they, I think this is wrong. I think they made a mistake. What am I missing?
Unless they're talking about team sport.
It said sporting event.
Okay. Yeah, is it, I mean, state of California. I mean, I didn't see that exact report, but I don't think that's right.
Largest U.S. sporting event attendance since the pandemic. So, yeah, I think that's wrong, too. I'm going to go Indy 500. We may have somebody call up and correct me on that one. But that's what I'm going with. All right, and then a couple of other notes. We'll hit on the U.S. Open. And so I'm watching this press conference. It's kind of silly. So Brooks Koepka and the feud with Bryan DeChambeau. Koepka says the feud is good for golf. You got people talking about it. You got eyeballs watching golf. People wondering if they're going to get paired together. So he said it's good for the game. And then DeChambeau said, personally, I love it. It's been fun. It's been hilarious. And so I'm thinking, well, if you're enjoying it so much, how come when people call you Brooksy, you wanted them escorted off the course? How come when you're on the driving range, somebody said, Brooksy, you said, whoever said that, get the hell out of here. So that doesn't sound like somebody that's having fun with it. So and then there was this line from Koepka that was pretty funny. So DeChambeau, in an earlier tournament, hit a ball in the rough, and then he wanted relief because he said if he stood to hit his ball, there were a bunch of ants that were near his feet, so he wanted to get some relief so he wouldn't have to step in the ant pile. So a little later, Koepka hit a ball in the rough, and he looked and he said, oops, he told his caddy, there's an ant. And the caddy said, what? Koepka said, oh, I'm just kidding. So he's just jabbing at DeChambeau whenever he can, and I think it's getting under DeChambeau's skin, whether he wants to admit it or not. Also with the U.S. Open, Phil Mickelson, who was 100-1 long shot to win the PGA, which he did, could be a million-dollar liability to the books in Vegas. He opened at an 85-1 underdog to win the U.S. Open, which he's never won. He's had six runner-up finishes. So right away, a man bet $2,100 on Mickelson, and if Mickelson wins, the guy wins $178,500. And now Mickelson has gone down to 50-1 on the odds. The only bigger golf liability that I read was Tiger Woods in 2019 when he won the Masters. He was coming off injury, wasn't expected to do anything, and I don't know the odds, but that's the bigger liability along with this Phil Mickelson situation where the Vegas could lose a lot of money if he wins it. John Rahm is at 9-1, the only golfer in single digits as a favorite. 18-1, you got Bryan DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka, along with Justin Thomas. And then at 20-1, there is Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, Xander Schauffele. So those are the odds on the other golfers that are out there, and you know, we'll see what happens. And by the way, Rahm in his interview said that people that said that he was mistreated and that he should have been able to go play by himself and all that, he said, look, that's ridiculous. He said, I knew the rules. He said, I knew it. He said, and the PGA did what it was supposed to do. I have no problem with it. He said, I'm trying to live in the present, but he said, don't criticize the PGA. Those are the rules. And he said, basically, he said his mistake was he did not get vaccinated sooner. He got vaccinated the Monday of the Memorial Tournament, and he said, to be honest with you, I didn't really think about it. All I was thinking about was how I was improving my game and getting better. I didn't think about getting vaccinated. That's on me. And I thought John Rahm handled that terrifically. He had a lot of people in his court or in his camp saying, hey, that BGA was wrong. He said, no, they abided by the rules. That's on me. I thought that, Vince, I thought that was a very mature way to handle that situation.
Absolutely. I agree with all of that. I think the tour handled it well. He handled it maturely and, you know, admitted. A lot of people may not have admitted that, you know, hey, I wasn't thinking about the vaccine, that I got it too late, that, you know, a lot of people wouldn't have put that out there and put themselves on Front Street like that. So, I just well done for him. You feel horrible for him, but you know, he admitted that maybe there's something he could have done to help that situation. By the way, Jimmy, clarification on that attendance story you're talking about for the Dodger Stadium sellout. The specific wording, because I found the NBC News story, the specific wording is U.S. professional sports team event since the pandemic struck, because later in the story, it does mention crowds that have been larger to watch major sports events, but this is sports team attendance. So he points out more than 70,000 for the Canelo Alvarez, Billy Joe Saunders boxing event at Arlington Stadium at Jerry's World. You had 78,000 apparently for a Melbourne cricket ground for Australian rules football. So then there was 51,000 at Churchill Downs for the Kentucky Derby, and points out, as you did, 135,000 for the Indianapolis 500. So that was his separator. I think it's obviously misleading, but when you look at the tiny little specifics of the wording, that's what he was getting at, sports team largest crowd.
And that is 100% not what it said, because I was, and I'm not arguing with what you just read, but I'm saying that when I watched that, it was on TV, I paused it and I read it and I'm like, no, wait a minute, I know that's not right. But that is not what it said. The thing that I saw reported, it was the largest U.S. sports event attendance. Sports event attendance in the United States. So they
may have seen that story and then misapplied it to that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, I knew that wasn't right. It just didn't. Well, I knew better than that. So anyway, this might have rivaled an MMA match. This is pretty interesting here. So, and this is a golf tournament. So there's Monday qualifying on the Corn Ferry Tour for the Wichita Open. So there's a threesome that's playing. And one of the golfers, Luke Smith, who's from Covington, Tennessee, plays at UT Martin. His dad is his caddy. There were two others in the group. So when the other guys would hit a ball, maybe in the rough, they were trying to find it, Smith and his dad would not help them find their golf balls. So this group fell two holes behind. And then one of the players said something to the Smiths about, hey, you know, if we would all share in trying to look for golf balls, we wouldn't get two holes behind. Smith's dad then fired back, I'm not here to look for your golf balls. Just hit it straight and on the green. Well, the player that had made the comment, Austin Daly, he pushed Smith's father. Smith then went after Daly and tackled him, hit him, wrestled him, tackled him to the ground, and then made him say uncle before he let him off the ground. So, in the course of that, the police got called, and Luke Smith was arrested and charged with misdemeanor battery. He since was released from bail. Derek Fribbs, who was also in this group, he was the third player in the group, said that that the Smiths had kind of been bringing this on, egging this on all the way, and that he kind of put blame on them. And he also said that this is embarrassing for the Smith, for Smith and his dad. And he mentioned that the dad was encouraging this kind of behavior. Now, so anyway, I can't quite recall a golf story like that, Vince, where I know that players get mad and stuff like that and don't like each other at times. But for a somewhat of a fight to break out and a guy tell another guy, I'm not going to let you up until you say uncle. Man, oh, and by the way, the Corn Ferry cleared this up. None of the players were tour members. They were just trying to get a qualifying spot. So, your thoughts?
Well, first of all, this probably happens with regular, everyday, non-tour players a little bit more frequently. Fights breaking out, you know, little adult beverages flowing. I'm guessing that it gets even more vicious than this. But for it to, for that to happen on that tour or qualifying for it, is unreal. And trust me, Jimmy, I call MMA cage side. I don't remember anyone holding a guy down. And instead of ground and pound, he says, say uncle, and then I'll let you up.
Isn't that a classic? I mean, I used to do that when I was like six.
Okay? Right. Jimmy the Bully. Yeah, I know.
Oh, man. But to have supposedly grown men out there.
Right.
Oh, goodness. So, anyway, I just thought that was a fascinating story. It's not one that you see very often as far as pro golf and qualifying for the Corn Ferry Tour. So, anyway, when we come back, we're going to have more notes. I've got a couple more things to discuss in regard to the NBA, also with Major League Baseball, and a couple of other items as well. Hey, if you want to join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. And I will tell you, we've got three guests lined up. We have not been able to fix our phones yet. So we don't know if we're going to be able to get our guest at 405, 435, and 505. We will see. We're continuing to work in that regard. We are not going to be able to get our guest today. We had lined up Davis Tarwater. We lined up John McClain that we were hoping to get. We also had a sports attorney that was going to join us. And that is Dan Luss. We are going to try to reschedule them, but the phones are out of order, and we're going to work to try to get that done, rescheduling them for later in the week. Do want to mention the Bobby Mays Tennessee alumni game. It's going to be held at William Blount High School July the 3rd at 6 p.m. At William Blount High School, July 3rd, 6 o'clock, Tennessee alumni basketball game run by Bobby Mays. He's going to be there. How about this lineup? Jordan McRae, Wayne Chisholm, Jordan Bowden, Jordan Bone, Scotty Hobson, Kenny Hall, Melvin Goins, Cam Tatum, Juwan Smith, Josh Bone, Kyle Alexander, Lamonte Turner, Admiral Schofield, Robert Hubbs, John Fields, Quay Parker, Tyler Smith, Ron Slay, Skylar McBee, Grant Williams, Brian Williams, Vincent Yarborough, Devon Bulkman, Damon Johnson, Jerron Maimon, Duke Cruz, and J.P. Prince. That's a pretty good group for an alumni game, Vince.
That is. That sounds like that the roster for the tournament. That you know you could line up those same guys, and you know you got more recent VFLs. You have guys from 5-8 years ago, and you have some of the older ones as well. So that's a super list.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive that they have put together. All right, and we'll have Bobby Mays on a little bit later at some point to visit with him about that. Vince, I understand there's some more awards surrounding Tennessee baseball?
Yes. The National Collegiate Baseball Writers Association, they came out with their team today, and only one Tennessee representative on it, and that starting pitcher, Chad Dallas, was named to the third team in the National Collegiate Baseball Writers Association national team. Chad, 11-1 record, 4.10 earned run average, was the game one starter all season except for the SEC baseball tournament in Hoover for Tennessee junior from Orange, Texas, and pitched 96 and two-thirds innings for Tennessee. Opponents hit just 235 against them, 19 walks, 118 strikeouts. Just an absolute bulldog competitor. Defense loves playing behind him. Throws strikes, and good for him to get recognized. Liam Spence, Jake Rucker. I mean, there's plenty of candidates. The thing is, you know, a lot of these teams are based solely on numbers, Jimmy, and Tennessee's numbers are spread out. Like, some of their top home run hitters are guys with some of the lower averages among the starters. Even though, you know, those numbers have climbed, they don't have the eye-popping averages if they have a lot of home runs, and some are vice versa. So, that's – and then when you're thinking about shortstops and outfielders, they're so deep. This year with college baseball and every guys having the year of eligibility and having, you know, the shortened draft to where a lot of players stayed throughout college baseball. And then obviously in newcomers as well, Enrique Bradfield Jr., freshman at Vanderbilt, and many other really talented freshmen. This is the most talented year of college baseball we've ever seen. So it is a high level of competition. So, you know, Tennessee didn't have old crazy numbers with first round draft pick hype behind them for some of their guys, and so you know, that's how you end up with a team going to the College World Series, just one representative on that one. That doesn't mean there won't be other Tennessee guys represented on some of the other national awards. There's 6 weekly polls, so you know there's going to be other teams that'll be out there, and maybe some other guys will get represented there. Certainly the all-freshman team, I think you're going to see Blade Tidwell whenever those come out, all-freshman, all-American, freshman all-American. I think you'll see Blade Tidwell listed in a number of those.
Yeah, and but to your point, when you look at the numbers for the players, I could see where you would go in favor of some others that put up bigger numbers, but I've heard it said, I think even Tony Vitello indicated this, the team is better than the individual parts. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. I mean, how many teams in the country have their 5 through 9 hitters each with at least 10 home runs?
Right.
How many? Very few. And there weren't very many Tennessee players that hit over 300 this year, were they?
Spence and Rucker.
Two that I could think of, yeah.
Yeah, and Jimmy, looking at the first team, this shows you how much it's on numbers. Every person on the first team for the National Collegiate Baseball Writers Association, everybody has an average of 330 or better, between 330 and 410. You know, some of them with massive home run and RBI totals and things like that. And you know, just it's incredible how deep college baseball was this year. So, you know, and all the pitchers, every pitcher had it, except for one, had an ERA of 2.46 or lower. Some even sub one, like Kevin Copps and Palmquist from Miami. So just, you know, incredible depth. Even on the second team, there's guys with 400 or higher averages on the second team, you know. So it's just such a deep year in college baseball, and the talent is spread throughout college baseball. It's not just with the powers like you see in sports like football and basketball.
So of the 8-man lineup for Tennessee on the diamond, who is the best pro prospect? Do you think it's Rucker? Do you think it's Jordan Beck or somebody else? Who you like?
Well, short term, it's Max Ferguson for next year. And he was a guy that was on a lot of draft boards, you know, 30s, 40s, somewhere in that range, some 50s, depending on your publication. So I think the slow start initially hurt him, but then as the year has gone on, he's gotten better offensively and more comfortable, showed his all-around game. His offensive numbers went up, and then he's continued to flash just a ridiculous glove and range at second base. So for this year, I would say it's Max Ferguson. An unknown is Jackson Leith. You know,
I said the position players.
Okay, the position players. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I would say it's Max Ferguson for this year.
Okay.
But Jordan Beck will be potentially first round, second round for next year. But for this upcoming draft, it's Max Ferguson.
Yeah, and I mean, and I didn't mean for any particular draft. I just at any point in their career, if you thought who would be the best pro prospect, would you still take Ferguson over Beck?
I don't know that Max will go in the first round. So Tony Vitello has consistently said that he thinks he has first-round draft potential. I haven't looked ahead to next year's boards to see if they're already projecting Beck for that level. But if that's the case, it's Jordan Beck because he's a potential first-round pick. And then Tidwell, I believe, from an age standpoint, might be draft eligible. I need to double-check that. But if he is and he has a year like this next year, then he could very well be a first-round pick as well, but you're talking about position players, so might give Beck the edge right now out of any year.
You're trying to cavalierize the question. where I was going to jump to next was out of the pitchers, and regardless of this year's draft, 3 years down the road or whatever, who do you think are the best major league prospects on this staff? Is it Jackson Lee? Is it Blade Tidwell? Who do you think will be the best pro prospects on the roster pitching-wise?
I think it's Blade Tidwell, and his velocity gets up to 99, so he's a power arm. Obviously, just did a much better job as the year went on. Gave up the 6 runs in the Super Regional, but some of that was with a big lead. They just wanted him to throw strikes, and so that's kind of, as Tony Vitello has mentioned, kind of the price of doing business. So he had given up in his previous 38 innings prior to the Super Regional. He'd only given up 6 earned runs. So, I mean, he has gotten better as the year has gone on and even pitched really well in postseason also. So I think with his power arm and his stuff that's filthy, the way he carries himself, I think he's probably their best. Jackson Leith is an unknown because of his health status. He's a guy that Tony has mentioned a couple times that he's turned down pro money with his potential because he's another guy that can get to mid-upper 90s with his fastball with really good arsenal of pitches. So it depends on where he is from a health standpoint, but he would maybe be at number 2 among the pitchers. You know, that they don't they have some guys that have had great success in college, but maybe not MLB projectable, like, you know, Will Heflin, Redmond Walsh. Hundley is a guy that I think can play on that level, but he doesn't overwhelm you with his velocity and stuff. He'll give up a hit and then induce a double play, get a strikeout, and you're done. So it's not flashy and perfect, but he gets the job done. And they have a lot of those kind of guys on that staff.
Yeah, and I like guys that can get it done, even though they might not be flashy. I think Hundley has a shot in Major League Baseball. I may be wrong.
I think Kamen Sewell does as well, and then Chad Dallas. And so those would be some others. But I would say right now I think Tidwell would be at the top in terms of the pitchers we've seen.
That's Vince Ferrar. I'm Jimmy Himes. I had called for folks to call in. Well, our phones are out of order. You can't even call in. I'm sorry about that. But anyway, in our guest lineup, we're going to have to try to juggle that and see if we can't move some folks to later in the week as well. So we apologize for that. A tennis note, Roger Federer, he lost the Halle Open in Germany. That's the first time after 17 years in a row of making it at least to the quarterfinals on the grass court tune-up. So Wimbledon is next. That is Roger Federer's best surface. He's won Wimbledon more than any other of his 20 majors. But he's also 39 years old, so I've got to wonder if, even though that's his best surface, if his skill level is at the position where he would be able to win Wimbledon. I think he can win several matches. Not sure if I think he can bring home the trophy. Also, wild cards for Wimbledon were given to Venus Williams, who has suffered from fatigue for a number of years, and so she's got a wild card in at singles. Good for them on doing that. And then Andy Murray, the former winner. So he is getting a wild card into Wimbledon. Wimbledon starts June the 28th. There will be another grass tournament prior to that before we see Wimbledon. They got through with the French Open in pretty good fashion. And they continue to open the stands there. Wimbledon, they're going to start, I understand, at 50% capacity. And then as the tournament moves on, they're going to eventually move to 100% capacity. And so Vince, that's kind of the way of the world. The different events across the country, United States included, some have gradually opened, some are at 100%, but at least it seems like we're getting back to some sense of normalcy.
Yeah, working towards there. And even when the attendance is back, it doesn't mean that operationally everything is back to normal. College World Series is like that. There are going to be a lot of restrictions sort of behind the scenes that aren't going to impact the fans necessarily, doing a lot virtually. They're really limiting, you know, people's access to different areas and different times. So it's still being felt even beyond the fans, but at least we're going in the right direction overall.
Absolutely. All right, when we come back, we will have more. We've got several topics to discuss a little bit later. We will talk at some point about the top neutral site games that are scheduled in college football this year. We'll have a little bit more on the U.S. Open. We'll have more on the NBA and more on the NFL. This is Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal.